for this moment, for all my life. Hold on. I can feel it coming in the air tonight.
Dude. I want to parody this song for Nurses Week.
We're doing like our own live bumper music on the show.
It's really tremendous. I want to do a version of that for Nurses
for
Week.
For Nurses Week?
Because it'd be amazing, right? Someone said it's quiet on the wards tonight. Oh no.
Dun, dun, dun. That's really good.
Right? We should do it.
Because everybody knows nurses hate when you say that to them.
Everybody does.
Like, that's like the biggest faux pas.
You go on, start your ER shift, your hospital shift. Man, it's totally quiet tonight. Oh, snap.
It's like, who brought this bitch?
Yeah, you need to shut your hole.
You need to shut the fuck up.
And it's usually some like cowering male medical student who's like, man, it's really quiet today. And they're like, do you remember? Let me pull up everyone's comments here.
So what are we going to talk about today,
Zee? We're going to talk about...
What do you want to talk about?
Sparkotypes.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so check it out.
Lead it in.
My therapist... Yeah, that's right.
It's pronounced the rapist.
Because I work on my mind, dog. Keep it strong.
It's true, though. But no, all joking aside, Tom has a therapist, and it's actually helped him a lot.
Yes, it's true.
He's 70% the asshole when I met him.
It's true.
Which actually is a little sad because...
Yeah.
I fell in love with the asshole that I met. Anyways, go on.
Anyway, my therapist was like, you should listen to this podcast. It's called The Good Life Project. And they have this thing about how to live your best life or like your truth or whatever. It's like an Oprah thing, right? Mm. And I was like, first of all, it's what I thought. I can't repeat on camera, but I was like, that's the lamest shit I ever heard in my life. So I was like, I'm not doing that. And then I couldn't sleep the other night, and so I finally listened to it on her recommendation. I was like, interesting. And they have this thing called a sparkotype, which is so lame, I can't even begin to tell you.
Wow.
But it's based on this Japanese concept of ikigai. Have you heard about this before?
I have not, but sounds like something Andy Loin would know about.
So there's a thing floating around on the internet. It's a meme, and in the middle of it, it says ikigai, and basically it's a Venn diagram that goes in like 12 different directions. That's like, you know, what you're good at, what you love, what you can get paid for, all these kinds of things. And then in the middle is ikigai. It's like your purpose, your true life's calling, right? Where you find yourself in a flow state or whatever.
Mm.
So they have this thing called the sparkotype, which is like the white people version of ikigai. And so we took the assessment. I took it last night, and then on my recommendation, I made everybody on the team take it. So I made Z take it, and I made Logan take it, and we all got interesting results.
Yeah. So I, you know, it's funny because normally, if a guy had asked me to take some kind of online personality test, I'd have been like, okay, this conversation's over. But it's Tom Heineber, and as Tom progresses through the therapy, he usually comes away with occasional pearls.
Dude, by the way, there's this joke on Twitter where this guy was like, hey, listen, Facebook's selling your data, everybody, okay? So if you took a BuzzFeed test in 2011 about which Ninja Turtle you were and you got Michelangelo, good luck getting a mortgage.
It's true. Now, see, now I'm worried they're going to know that my sparkotype, you know, doesn't love a hoe.
They're gonna be like, oh, damn, this guy got the...
He got the you don't love a hoe sparkotype. Anyway, so we sat down and we took this on our phones. It takes like, you know, 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to answer honestly because the questions keep getting revised based on what you said previously.
Right.
You have to be brutally honest with yourself. Like, I want to be this person, but no, that's not who I am. I'm this person. So we took it. And who should we talk about first?
Let's talk about your result, because I thought your result was very interesting. Because I was expecting one of the sparkotypes is called the entertainer. And I was expecting Z to get the entertainer. And then there's another, you get a sub-sparkotype, which I was expecting you to get the maker, which, you know, means you're creative and you make things. And you did get that one.
Yeah, I got that as a sub-type.
But your main sparkotype was...
It's
so terrible.
It's like a My Little Pony.
It's so terrible.
It's sparkotype.
It's a good test, but that sounds so dumb, like the marketing around it. Anyway, your main one was the sage, which basically means that you get the most joy, you find the most personal fulfillment in teaching others, which makes a lot of sense when you stop to think about your whole career path. And like, you went from teaching MCAT you know, at Berkeley, and then, you know, going on and on and on. You know, you've always been in some sort of teaching role. Like, you used to lead residents. The reason you love Stanford, right, is because it's a teaching hospital. It's one of the best teaching hospitals in the world.
You know, it's strange. I'm not much for introspection. Like, we've had this conversation. Like, if you ask me to tell people what I'm about. I'm like, I'm a professional clown that juggles on TV. And I'm unable to self-reflect to the degree that I can actually express it. What's interesting is this test is exactly that. It made me realize, wait, no, that's exactly what it is. The through line in my life has been teaching. So there's a subtype of this, which is you're passionate about learning stuff that you care about, but not as in and of itself, but as a means to teach others and see them light up when they get it, right? The whole Z-Dog thing was about, because you can entertain people doing a lot of things.
Right.
You could be a filmmaker, you could be a musician, none of that has any interest to me. It was using the Z-Dog platform as a mechanism to teach other people or inspire people or get people around an idea and see what they say about it and watch them react to it and interact with it. So this thing was remarkable. I was like, I was a little skeptical. And then I got the result and I'm like, that's what it is. And then the subtype of the maker means, well, so how do you teach? Well, you create a platform that's unique to do that. And what's interesting is yours was something that was a little surprising, but on reflection actually isn't.
So we should say that everybody on the team had the same subtype, which is the maker, yeah. Which is, you know, it makes sense because we're all in a creative field and we all make content and do things every right. single day.
Right. Logan had the maker, you had the maker, I had the maker.
That was our sub archetype.
Right.
My primary one was the scientist, mm-hmm. which I was not expecting to get. I was expecting my main one to be the maker, like the creative type. And right. then I was like, on introspection, you know, it makes a lot of sense because everything's a means to an end for me. Like I want to make a video to get to some fundamental truth about humanity or what we're doing here, or, you know, something that's objectively true. And yeah. that's science at the heart of it. I just use, you know, art to do it.
And I think that's true. And that's why you're so interested in things like cryptocurrency as a scientific means to transform certain problems like inflation and economic right. inequality and things like that.
You know, and it's interesting because, you know, me and Z always are batting around, you know, ideas when we talk about things, and Z is always like, here's what I want to do. I learned this new thing about this and I want to teach people about X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, and this is me, I'm like, that's some dumb shit that some idiot wrote a book about. That doesn't mean anything to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're not doing that. That's stupid, Z. Yeah. And then Z's like, Tom Heidenberg, I pay your salary, so shut up. We're going to do it. And that's how we produce some of the mediocre content.
That's no, exactly kidding. Right. No, but it's exactly true. I'm actually putting in I'm trying to put in the link for the...
Oh, the assessment.
The assessment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
The problem is these little dillets move.
So we'll
so
talk
fast.
About, while Z is doing that, I'll talk about Logan, who got the Maven as his primary, yeah. which sounds a little effeminate, I'm not going to lie, but it's okay. He's a Maven, people. He's a Maven. And anyway, the Maven is an interesting archetype because it really, I'm saying archetype because I don't want to use Sparkotype.
Yeah,
anyway,
no, Sparkotype really is
does
terrible.
It really does define Logan. Logan is constantly interested in learning new things all the time, and that's what the Maven is. It's like you're the type of person who just wants to learn. You're like a voracious reader, and you always want to know about, you want to dive in. You want to use immersion to get into new topics and subjects, and you want to keep churning through these topics and subjects so that eventually you learn everything, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting because that's totally Logan.
It's kind of Logan. And it's not part of that archetype to actually share that knowledge with others.
Yes.
So
yeah,
that's
yeah.
why
so unlike
Maven.
The teacher,
uh-huh.
Z gets the knowledge and then he wants to go shout it from the mountaintops, right? Logan gets the knowledge and he's like, well, now I learned that. All right.
It's true.
Next.
And you know? You just want the knowledge to be correct. You're looking for truth.
I'm just looking for truth.
In an absolute sense.
Yeah.
The scientist way.
Mm-hmm.
And all of us have the maker subtype, so we want to build it. And I put the link for the goodlifeproject.com or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah.
So you can take it. It's free. I think you give them your email and you can opt out of the email list. But it's definitely worth doing because what it does, again, anything that cuts through our self-deception. So this idea that we're really good at lying to ourselves about what we are and who we are. So I could lie to myself and say, no, I'm about, you know, truth for the sake of truth, or I'm about entertaining, or I'm about, you know, transforming medicine. The
yeah.
truth is, no, I'm about being the sage figure that helps others to learn things that I'm passionate about and then teach others too. So that's my thing. And once you come to terms with what your archetype is, then you can start to go, am I living in a way that
yeah.
actually takes, and I got a mouthful of xylitol. Xylitol, delicious.
Stop showing xylitol.
You can, Is there a archetype called the shill?
The shill.
Yeah, because I'd like to be
Dr. Oz yeah. is the shill.
No one's paying us. We just have all this xylitol because they came and brought like a case of it when we did the show.
I think it's an interesting assessment. The reason I made everybody take it and the reason my therapist made me take it is because it sort of clarifies what you're all about. And so I think in a lot of, you know, in life, we find ourselves living in these deluded ways often where we're like, that's not who I am. I'm the guy who does this and that. You know, it's like the John Lennon thing. Life is what happens when you're busy making other plans. You
right.
know? You often have an unclear perception of who you are.
Well, and we have this conversation all the time on the show. I think it's important for healthcare people too, because they're often in these jobs where they feel so commoditized and devalued, and they're like, "Who am I?"
Totally,
the I is lost.
Yeah,
like it's just this mess of, you know. And it's funny. So,
or like maybe you went in to be a doctor because you like really wanted to help people,
right?
And you got beaten down by the system. You realized you couldn't help people, and then at a certain point, you made it about money, and you're like, "I'll just make money.
Right,
and that's fine. I'll take care of my family."
Then you know? Do the archetype thing, and you realize, "Oh no, actually, I went in this to relieve suffering.
Like, right,
I'm the healer or whatever archetype it is." So it's interesting. So to ask me these questions. It's almost like the computer understands the direction you're going as it starts to craft the questions.
Yes.
And it started going, oh, this guy may be a doctor or something or some kind of healer. So it started asking me these questions. So you're all about here. Do you disagree with this statement? Like, if you had all the money in the world, you would relieve human suffering. And I was like, that's like a 4 out of 10 for me.
Right.
Because honestly, that's not, if I'm being honest with myself, like there are better ways to do that than just going out and doing charity or whatever for me. Like actually the teaching is a way I relieve human suffering, but it's not the primary. And so if you answer that truthfully, you get a truthful answer. Mm-hmm. So you can be in medicine and not be the compassionate Mother Teresa type, but you can still help people using your gift. So I think this is a super useful tool. I was a little bit surprised. The more I think about it, the more I'm like, Tom Heineberg is not as clinically disadvantaged as I thought.
it's interesting just to have something, and it's not one of these like, what type of brownie are you? It's like, you're a fudge brownie, here's why. You're a little nuts, whatever. It's actually something that's somewhat informative, although Sparkotype is, oh my god,
it's terrible.
It's noxious.
We talked about, we took the Jordan Peterson test, the Big Five personality test. This is not incompatible with that, but they're very different.
Yeah.
So how open are we, how conscientious are we, how diligent are we, are we an introvert or an extrovert, those kind of things. That's what it'll tell you. This is more like, are you walking the path that your elephant, right, your unconscious really is designed to walk?
Totally.
And if you're not, then you might find that you're unhappy, or you might find that you're always looking for the next thing. I get so many messages from people too. It's like, yeah. Oh, and this is interesting too. So one of the questions, the lines of questions it started asking me was, you get the most joy, is this true or not, from mentoring others, coaching others, advising others one-on-one? And I was like, hell no. Like, I get so many messages in my inbox. They're like, I need your advice on this. And I'm like, I want to die right now.
Yeah.
I can't advise you. I don't know you. I can do a show.
Right.
About the topic you're talking about.
Right.
And be fired up in a flow state and passionate about it. And then you can take out of that what is personal to you. But I'm not your personal mentor. So I figured that out too. It's kind of interesting.
No, it's interesting. Think about it too. Like when we first met, you were living in oblivion on YouTube. Like, no, really. You had a little bit of, a little bit of juice, but like it wasn't really happening for you. And I was like, as the scientist, as my archetype, I come in and I'm like, oh, you need to be on Facebook. Because that's where your demo is. Like, that's where people are. And Facebook is attacking Google right now and trying to juice their algorithms. So now's the perfect time to make the switch. And then we started putting all the content on Facebook. And then people started following it writ large. And that helps you teach. And it makes me feel good because I figured out the truth about what was needed in this situation.
That's true. You get a dopamine rush from being correct and figuring out the truth.
Dude, I love being right so much. Being right is so much better. It's better than sex. Like, being right is the greatest feeling in the world. You know what I mean? You know how you shouldn't fight with your wife? What I mean?
Yeah.
Because, you're not going to get any sex.
Right.
On rare occasions, being right feels almost better until I realize what I've done. And then I'm like, I'm so sorry. I apologize.
But this is specific, I think, to your scientist.
To me, yeah.
Yeah. Because it's funny. I have no problem. I actually sometimes enjoy being wrong because it creates more drama and teachable moments.
Mm.
But so it's interesting. So, because I remember you were proposing that we do Moana's You're Welcome.
Oh, yeah.
For Nurses Week 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember just being like, well, I don't know the song that well. I saw the movie. I didn't really love it. Maybe, I don't know, what is it about? And you're like, trust me, Z. It clicks these boxes. It has this emotional valence. It has this. And then I listen to it again, and I'm like, okay, I feel it. I feel the valence. So now I'm enjoying this. Yeah. I'm going to make it. And when it went crazy, you were like, I told you. Like, this was correct. That's the right thing.
That's my favorite shit.
And yet I was miserable because I was like, I hate this video. I hate everything about it. Because it just felt, it felt so cheesy to me. But yet there it was.
That's why actually, I like investing too. Investing is like that, because it's like, here's how right I was, denominated in U.S. currency. You know what I mean? Yeah, but I was exactly this right.
I love it. Is that why you like trolling too? You're a very good troll.
Trolling is great too.
Yeah.
Trolling is really though about exposing others, because trolling is a rhetorical art form.
Right.
Trolling is very similar to like what Socrates and Plato would do back in the day. I mean, that was trolling.
They were professional trolls. Yeah.
When you troll, you set a honeypot if you're doing trolling correctly. Like to go on and troll and be like, you know, hey, you're a stupid, ugly, fat piece of lard. That's not trolling. You're just being a mean dick, right? Yeah. You have to create a trap that people are going to fall into. And then when they fall into the trap, then you hit them with the second piece of your, you know, whatever you're trolling about.
Right.
And it's very specific. It's rhetorical.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And is it about being right?
That's about exposing truth.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exposing truth.
Because oftentimes people are wandering around with something incorrect in their heads or they're deluded about X, Y, and Z. Mm. And you just clarify it and you just be like, look how wrong you are. Here it is.
Right.
Yeah, that's why I like trolling.
Right. Now, the problem is, I think it doesn't...
Like one time I went on the anti-vax message boards, for people who don't know the story, I got a woman to move her houseplant from one side of the room to the other, because she had posted a thing and she was like, hey, I have this Himalayan salt crystal lamp and I have this houseplant that are both supposed to have magic properties, and I'm worried that these two magic properties interact. And I was like, you don't know how close you almost came to death. They do interact. Here's why. Here's a Norwegian study that I just fake wrote. It says these points about how the energies from the healing chakras and the crystals, you know, co-mingle, and then they create sort of a toxic factor. So you're actually toxifying your home by having them too close, because two negatives make a toxin, I guess. And she sent me a picture of her. She had moved her plant 10 feet away because I told her to move it 10 to 12 feet away.
Wow.
And she was like, is this better? And I was like, you nailed it. You're going to be in the clear now. You're like, you're safe. Like, you're okay.
That's tremendous. And you know what you're doing is you're satirizing the incorrect nature.
Yes.
Of the harmony. It's like the guy who wrote the academic piece, the group that wrote the academic paper about doggy rape and doggy rape culture, and basically just took all the tropes of outrage culture and academia and wrote a fake paper that got peer reviewed and accepted
exactly.
to multiple journals, because it used all the keywords like doggy rape culture and identity.
Trolling
politics.
Is not about, people get this wrong about trolling, where they're like, you know, well, you're not even convincing the person because you're being mean to them, and people that are mean, they don't, you know, you catch more flies with honey. And you're like, okay, listen, this is a digital head on a digital spike. Mm. This is a warning to all other idiots.
Yeah.
Like, don't go near. Okay?
Yeah. There's dumbness here. Yeah. I think that's exactly correct. Let's see. What do we got here? Donna Lordy, the problem is that sometimes truth is subjective, where facts are always objective.
Yeah, this is such bullshit. And truth is not subjective.
And they are not always the same thing.
Truth is not subjective. Truth is 100% objective. Like, airplanes don't fly through the sky because, you know what I'm saying?
Like, I think we're done. Well, let me see. The problem is sometimes truth is subjective, but where the facts are always. So facts are always objective. Truth is subjective.
Facts and truth are the same.
And they are not always the same thing.
They're the same thing.
So she's arguing they're not. So she may be coming from, and again, I can't put words in her mouth. She's very smart and is usually right about most things. But this is more of the postmodernist idea that truth is relative.
Truth is not relative.
So truth is objective.
Suck it up, snowflakes. There's one truth. You can all live by it, or you can all choose not to.
Well, so it's interesting. So someone like Sam Harris actually written a book about the moral foundations. I forget the name of the book. It's something. He's saying morality is an objective truth.
Yes.
And so the way you measure it is, does it increase the well-being of conscious entities or decrease their suffering? If it does, then it's moral. If it makes it the opposite, then it's immoral.
Objective truth is found through consensus. So yes, it's true that we all are individual nodes in a network and we all have our own vantage point on that network. But when you look at the whole, when you look at consensus between nodes, that's truth.
So, but then is that an objective truth?
Yes. You reach objective truth through subjective truth.
So I guess it's not incompatible with what Donna's saying, which is there are facts and then there's truth. So that truth came from the emergence of a consensus among nodes. So in a way, that's a kind of subjective truth, but it's really truth.
Now we're fighting about semantics.
Yeah, it's semantics. Yeah. I mean, all of this shit is semantics.
Because to me, truth is like God. It's one of those big words that has to maintain its meaning. Mm. Or like racism. Guess what? I feel this way about racism too. That's a big word that has to maintain its meaning. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
If I'm meaning judging, it actually has to be racist.
If I'm judging you because you're white, that's racist.
Right, right.
I don't care if there's power structures. Of course, there's power structures.
There have been
power structures throughout time. Different power structures. Black people at the upper hand. White people at the upper hand. Jewish people have pretty much always been trampled upon.
Yeah.
So maybe they
and
do
yet have, secretly maybe have they the upper hand.
Maybe they do have a legit claim. Yeah.
Right.
But I mean, that's if you're going to. I like the dictionary definition of words, man, because I'm the scientist. I'm like, hey. Let's not change around these words.
Yeah.
It's meant the same thing for thousands of years.
You know what's interesting? So one thing, so I get this feedback occasionally. How come you never argue with Tom on the show? You never go at him and, you know, on these things that you may disagree about. And I'm like, because I find it highly educational for your viewpoint to be heard by our audience and me to just ask questions without necessarily, because I'm not searching, again, in my mind, truth precipitates from conversations and things like that. Mm. I don't need to be right. I need to hear these ideas and experience them and see where they fit in my own pantheon. And I think the audience does that too, the more enlightened audience.
Yeah.
The other ones are just like, or they agree.
I need to be right, which is why I gravitate towards things that have measurements. So money is a measurement.
Yeah.
When we do videos, there are views on
views,
them. That's
yeah.
a measurement.
Yeah.
Likes are a measurement. Right. Engagement's a measurement.
Yeah, yeah.
I like being able to measure if I was right or not.
Yeah,
if you can't measure it, I'm like,
how do you know? Right. Yeah, it's interesting. That's really interesting, which gets us interesting to the One Seek video. So relating to that, like if you measure it purely on views, you know, we did a show that was just like 2 minutes of me talking about social media that got 4.6 million views by all accounts, a super successful piece. Do I feel like I want to hang my hat on meaning and purpose and teaching from that? No. Whereas One Seek, which has 400 and some thousand views.
Right.
Had more meaning and purpose for me and teaching in it that I feel more value from that video. The Bare Naked Ladies retweeted it, right? Hey, we get a lot of these parodies. This is like the one.
See, I get more value out of the social media piece that was a hit because I was the one who asked you to do it. I was like,
That's true.
Talk about this thing with young girls in social media.
And you know, my response was, I've already talked about this.
Right.
I've done 5 shows on this.
But it was more succinct, which is why people were able to share it.
Right, the whole thing. Yeah. So it's interesting. So it really, again, if you guys are wondering, audience, ZPAC, whether these self-reflection tools are useful or not, or whether they're bullshit or whether they're lame or whatever, my argument is no, they're fucking really useful.
Yeah.
Because you now have a sense of...
Even if you think it's wrong,
it's even more useful.
It's useful to know how you thought it was wrong.
Right. Why do you think it's wrong? Did you answer the questions wrong? Because if you answered the questions right and it gave you an answer, you need to do some self-reflection.
Listen, I'm a skeptical person, okay? I'm the scientist, people. Anyway, when I hear something is called a sparkotype assessment, I'm like, dumb. I'm not doing that. Mm-hmm. But then I did it and I was like, you know what? There's some value to be captured here.
Tom, when he was proposing it to us, his like head was down a little. He was looking at his phone. He's like, so guys, I mean, this is something you should do. I'm going to text it to you right now. And it's called the sparkotype. And then both me and Logan were like, okay, buddy. Okay, we see you. It's Monday. Maybe you're a little hungover. I don't know what it is. And then we did it. We're like, okay, all right. The truth has been exposed. Mm-hmm. Tom's a truth seeker. Let's take some comments.
Wait, who said the thing about truth earlier that I'm
It was
aligned?
Donna Lordy.
Donna, I'm sorry. I think we have a semantic disagreement.
Yeah, I think you and Donna actually agree. By the way, Donna is a supporter and has really enlightened me in private messages about how depression is really, more than anything, a function of social isolation.
Yeah. Drug addiction too.
Drug addiction too. Same thing.
Because they're correlated.
Anomie, you know, this idea that you're disconnected from the larger set of connections that make us human.
Yeah.
I think it's very true.
Do you know that in the areas with the highest drug addiction, you also find the lowest unemployment, and then you also find the highest suicide rate? All three of those things correlate.
You see, they're all, it's all a part of that disconnection spectrum.
And it's men. Because when men have lost their jobs, they have no meaning in their life. Mm. And it goes back to exactly what we're talking about. You know, maybe they just need to take the Sparkotype assessment.
Yeah.
You're a coal miner in West Virginia. I'm kidding. just get online, find your Sparkotype, you know?
You know, bro, I don't know.
Do you know about, I should teach you about this. Do you know about Learn to Code? Did I tell you about this at all?
No.
So, okay, so journalists, when the coal miners were losing their jobs, were tweeting out, you know, maybe we should teach the coal miners to learn to code.
That's right.
Which is this very techno-utopian, let them eat cake, which is like, you know, just let
well, if you just learn how to code, yes, then you can exactly. have a job.
It's like, yeah, because I'm a 50-year-old coal miner, and I'm a fucking learn to code. I'm not going to do that. So when the journalists started getting fired from BuzzFeed, people went online trolling them rhetorically, and they kept saying, you know, why don't you just learn to code? Hey, you know what I mean? You lost your job? Oh, you should just learn to code, right?
Right.
And so Twitter turned learn to code into hate speech. And so now you can't tweet that at a journalist. You can't tell a journalist to learn to code, which is basically like, you can't point out where their thinking is flawed to them.
See, this to me is, again,
because it's now hate speech.
Well, let's double down on this hate speech thing. So YouTube just demonetized all anti-vaccine speech. So if your video is talking about vaccine denial, you cannot put ads on it anymore.
Yeah.
And I went on Twitter and tweeted this and said, this is a good thing. And honestly, if I were making hate speech of any kind, I would expect to be demonetized. I don't expect to be deplatformed necessarily. Although I would say this, these are private entities.
Yeah.
Right? These are not public utilities.
It's very tricky.
Yeah.
Because
now you're talking about censorship. And
I think it's tricky because like they are the public square, you know?
Yeah.
I'm on a Twitter, I'm on a Twitter suspension at the moment.
Oh.
So Twitter's interesting because, you know, I tweeted out some very rude things about Noam Chomsky. And
just the fact that you care at all what that jackass has to say.
Yeah, I called him a limp dick soy boy.
Oh.
So it was a little harsh. And Twitter was like, hey, bro, why don't you go away for 7 days?
Oh, you had a 7-day suspension?
7-day suspension.
Limp dick soy boy. Can you
listen, that's truth. I'm searching for truth. We all can look at Noam Chomsky and know his dick doesn't work.
What is a soy boy? I've never understood this. Is this like
that's based on the claim that eating soy increases estrogen? It's based on the myth, I should say, not the claim.
You want to hear something terrible? So in medical school, this is the thing about nutrition. We know nothing about it.
Right.
So not doctors. I'm saying human race knows nothing about nutrition. And so in medical school in the 90s, I got on this soy kick where all I would do was eat tofu 3 meals a day, thinking, they say it's a health food. I'm going to eat it. I'm a medical student. It's low fat, high protein, lots of calcium. Mm-hmm. It's got to be good for you. I would season it. I would fry it 20 different ways. I'm pretty sure I grew man breasts, like 100%. I started menstruating. There is a lot of phytoestrogen in tofu.
You got a little gynecomastic.
I got gynecomastic. And actually, one of the earliest troll comments on one of my videos, I did a video with Dr. Harry called Witch Doctor. And it was about the different specialties. And I had a shirt on that was tight and my boobies were hanging like kind of droopy.
Yeah.
And because I was probably 10 pounds heavier than I was now. And some guy goes, bro, looks like you need gyno surgery. And I was like, what is that? And I had to search. I'm like, he wants me to have a breast reduction. And then I looked at myself and I had this moment of insight where I was like, I have man boobs and I never knew it. And I asked my wife, I'm like, do I have man boobs? She's like, yeah. I'm like, what? How come no one told me I had man boobs? And from then on, I became obsessive.
It just you know, it proves further the point that we're becoming insane left and right politically. Like, because you have, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is talking about in the Green New Deal, she basically wants to make everybody vegan. And she went on some Showtime show where she was like, listen, we shouldn't be eating 3 hamburgers a day. And I'm like, bitch, this is America. I'll do what I want. And then on the right, you have guys like Dr. Sean Baker who are eating nothing but meat.
Right.
And they're on the carnivore diet.
Right.
Like, I'm a real man because I just eat steaks, ate them raw all day long, right?
Yeah, it's
Okay, both of you are insane.
Yeah.
Can we just meet in the middle?
Let's meet in the middle. Like, I like a little meat here and there. I don't like torturing animals. We should try better not to torture animals. At the same time, I like my steak.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Now, there's going to come a time when we can grow that shit in the lab, and I think we should shoot for that.
Yeah, I'm not... into this. I used to be into this, and then I'm assuming that it's going to be like the margarine of the 21st century.
But you know, we could do it because it's all molecules, man.
Yeah, that's what they rearrange. Said about margarine too. They were like, margarine's just like butter. I can't even believe it's not butter.
I thought you seek truth, Tom Heinebury. We should be funding. Well, research.
I'll see when it happens. I'll be interested.
Yeah, to see what's
in
up.
What happens. But I'm skeptical at the moment.
Yeah, you should be skeptical.
I have my skeptical hippo eyes on. You know what I'm saying?
Just don't call the scientists soy boys because they get very triggered by that. So what happens when you're on a suspension? How do you know when it's resolved?
So in 3 days and 13 minutes, I can tweet again. And y'all motherfuckers better watch out because I'm coming back at you hard, Chomsky.
Sam Harris and Chomsky went at each other too, man. Yeah. Sam actually had to publish his papers, like his email correspondence with him.
Right. For anybody who doesn't know about that whole thing, it was Chomsky thinks that the American government is basically the most evil government in the history of the world because we have the highest body count because of things like the nuclear bomb and just how kick-ass we are in world wars. You're welcome, everybody else. France, looking at you. And Sam Harris was like, no, it's not about body count. It's about intent. It's about intent.
And you know what? I will... You know,
Americans got pushed into World War II, right?
Dude,
we finished it with the A-bomb,
or the
H-bomb at that time.
And that was the premise of that, as horrible as it was, the premise was to prevent even more losses on the ground in a bloody ground war of the Japanese mainland.
And we could have bombed Tokyo, and we didn't.
Right. Listen, it was the most awful thing that's ever happened in the history of humanity, maybe, in one given time. So many people lost their lives and were maimed and murdered and killed and destroyed. However, again, intention matters. So the intent was not to torture the Japanese people. The intent was to end the war quickly and with as least bloodshed as possible. So you can argue whether it was the correct
decision. Plus, I'm just going to say they drew first blood. They drew first blood.
You know, it's a usual countdown to a Rambo quote in this place. Actually, that's the first Rambo quote that's left your lips in this house of learning, this house of esteemed doctors. No. So it's interesting. So I agree with Harris that intent matters. Like as a country, we don't intend to commit collateral damage. ISIS does.
Right.
So making a moral equivalency between body count and ISIS versus the U.S. is totally stupid.
And that's why I hate Noam Chomsky and all liberals, really.
I just hate Noam Chomsky. So it's quite interesting. So I had an interesting message actually the other day from a high school friend of mine that I hadn't heard from in a long time. And she's Mormon by upbringing, but is a Democrat and lives in Florida. And so she's surrounded by very conservative thought, a lot of Trump stuff, a lot of other stuff. And she messaged me and said, listen, I think miracles still happen. I've been sharing your videos with people that are very conservative and very liberal, and they seem to each get something out of them that is some truth, some middle ground truth. And so whatever you're doing, keep doing it. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. I hope that's actually true. Because if we just took some stance and just sort of fought for it until we died, I think we'd influence a lot less change. Again, speaking as the sage, as the teacher from the spark type, to me, that's very powerful. Whereas if I'm just preaching to the choir or if I'm just, then it's not as interesting.
See, once I've found the truth and I know it's the truth,
in your mind,
I will just hammer it until it's made, like until it's real, until like I've affected you or whatever, like because I need the truth to be prevalent in the world.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, it explains a lot, actually. These are See, again, I'm more and more convinced this spark type thing, we should just buy them and call it something rational.
Yeah.
Like the rational personality type for who you are, like instead of the spark type nonsense. Spark type sounds like some kind of cliff notes for like, for morons.
Oh, and it's so bad. Their podcast is one of those NPR whisper speak podcasts.
Oh, really?
Where it's like, imagine yourself in a river with tangerine skies and marmalade trees.
Lucy in the sky with diamonds.
And you're like, who talks like this? Stop talking like this.
Terry Gross.
When Z first started doing a podcast, he did a whisper talk podcast where he was like, here's the thing. I'm Z-Dog MT and I'm testing these new microphones. I was like, he was like, what do you think of the podcast? I was like, stop it. Just stop it right now.
I hear where you're coming from, Tom, and I understand, but I also disagree.
It's funny, too, because I think people don't realize that because you are the teacher, the sage, who's trying to take in information and make decisions based on that, and I'm the scientist who's always looking for truth. Sometimes when you see me and Z behind the scenes, it's Z being like, here's this thing I'm thinking about, and I'm like, that's the stupidest fucking thing I've ever heard of, Z. Are you serious? That's what you think? That's dumb. And
I'm
Z's number two, and I'm dressing him down behind the scenes.
But you know what's funny
about
it?
And he's like, I don't know why you feel this way, Tom.
What's funny about it is, like, the way I perceive Tom's actions are like this. Oh, this is entertaining. Tom's got a point of view that I'm not going to agree with, but I'll just sit here and kind of smile because it's funny as hell. So that's the thing is, like, it would take months to convince me of a stance, although hanging out with Tom has moved me more to the center from my far left, which is good. It's actually good for what I do for a living, which is trying to communicate both sides. So now and we haven't even announced. I might as well announce it now because I think my kid's school knows, but we're moving the show back to the Bay.
Hell yeah.
Bay Area.
I mean, I'm not going there.
That's right. These two assholes are going to.
Full of liberals.
Yeah, exactly. They can't stand the truth, but I'll be living in the center of the truth, and we're going to be more engaged, I think, in the milieu of healthcare, in the different academic institutions that we can get guests, and just have, honestly, the real reason I'm moving back is that all my social network and friends, close connections are there except for you two. So we're going to fly you fools up. We're going to still make it work. We'll have a new studio there, but we're going to be based in the Bay Area starting probably midsummer.
Let me tell you a story I heard. I heard a story recently where a man has himself picked up in a van from Atherton to San Francisco every single day. And you're like, that doesn't sound that weird, Tom. There's rich people in Atherton. And of course, they would have a driver who would pick them up. In the back of the van is a Peloton bicycle and a television. And he does his stationary bike workout while being driven in a car on the way to work instead of just biking there like a normal fucking person. And this is the place you want to move back to, Z.
Yes, it is, Tom Harper.
Where this kind of behavior is tolerated.
Yes, it is. Although I'm going to say this. Yeah, exactly. Soy boy in the water. I'm moving to a part of the Bay, which I will not name because anti-vaxxers will try to murder me.
It's San Mateo, California.
Close to San Mateo, yes.
Please go there and murder him.
San Mateo. Where there's actually working class people who are not fabulously wealthy and they're actually decent people. Now
people are going to think you live in San Mateo now because I said that. But he doesn't.
No, it's San Mateo.
I was born in San Mateo.
Actually, San Mateo is the right answer because, you know. But let's see. So Rosie Garcia says, finally, you told them. Yeah, I told Rosie like months ago. She came to a talk of mine. She's a supporter. And I was like, yeah, I'm moving back to the Bay. Don't tell anyone. And she was really good about not telling anyone.
Hey.
Yeah. Yeah, because we decided, you know, it was a lot of soul searching because, again, I had to think about what's the best thing to do what we do. The problem with Vegas is wonderful. I love it. Actually, if I didn't have to move, I wouldn't. Like, I think this is a fantastic place to live.
For people who don't know or haven't been here, really experienced the city outside the Strip, Vegas is a very utilitarian place. Like, the cost of living is cheap here. You can be anywhere in the city in 15 minutes driving. Like, it's such a great place to just be able to do your shit. It really is.
Fantastic. There's no state income tax. Mm-hmm. The weather most of the year is fantastic. There's outdoor stuff. It's one flight away from everywhere. So for that reason, we didn't want to move. The problem was every time we go back to the Bay for a radical sabbatical in the summer for a couple weeks, I end up going, oh man, there's so much going on here that could energize the show and then us personally with our kids and the families that are friends of ours there and reconnecting with all the doctors that I know and that kind of thing. So it became a personal decision that was also a business decision. But honestly, if I could move back to Vegas and make it work, I would do it because this place is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
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 It really is.
I have a love-hate relationship with Vegas because, like, you know, Vegas is so easy. It's easy to live here. At the same time, it's still not really a place you want to raise your children.
Right.
Like, I was doing cocaine at 15.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, in high school.
Yeah.
Because I was cooler than all of you guys. Like, let's be real.
Well, you're looking for truth.
Yeah.
And the truth can only be found when you're fucking king of the world.
Doing copious amounts of drugs.
Exactly.
But, you know, looking back, that's not like a normal story. Most people weren't doing cocaine in high school. They waited till college, like respectable frat boys.
Respectable,
you know.
People, yeah. You know what's interesting? I've never done cocaine.
Yeah, it's not good. Yeah. It's a very weird drug. The first hit of cocaine is like, this is the greatest feeling I've ever felt. We should start a business, man. Here's the thing. You know how there's all those lumberjacks up in Oregon and they just cut down the trees? We should cut down the trees. We could make furniture out of them.
We're going to call it Lorax Industries and it's going
to
be amazing.
Yeah, it's like the dumbest. And then you take your second hit and you get to like 80% of that feeling. And the third hit, 60%. And the fourth hit, 10%. And then you keep doing line after line after line until suddenly you're super cracked out and you just feel, you know that feeling when you've had too much coffee and you're jittery and shaky? the feeling on cocaine is like that times a thousand, right? And so then you have to take a sleeping pill or like a Xanax or something to go to come down off of cocaine.
It's Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, and right. When you do that, you're like, I might die if I take this pill, but whatever, who cares? And then you go to sleep. And then you wake up and you're like, I probably shouldn't do that again. You
know? Well, I'm glad. I feel like I've done it now. I don't have to ever do that. I don't have to check that off my bucket list.
Don't do coke. Yeah, it's terrible.
DMT, LSD,
yeah.
Psilocybin, occasional marijuana.
I just keep it chill. I'm just like Miller Lite right now. You know what I'm saying?
You know what? Low carbs. What was it? Michelob?
Michelob Ultra. Low carb.
Low carb.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Couple Norcos on top of that. You're golden. Listen, do as I say, not as I do, people.
Oh, man. Some Cali people are giving me some love here. Yeah, I'm excited. So, and here's the thing. So I put this link that we're going to be broadcasting out of the Beta Brand Theater in March. It's earlier in one of the Facebook posts.
Yeah.
So we already almost sold out all the tickets. There are just a few left. So if you want to...
Am I coming?
To that one, if you want to come.
Am I invited, Z?
Yeah.
Do we get to do this? Because I would love to just speak truth to power in front of all the liberals.
Oh, my God.
It would be amazing.
Tom's going to come and do microaggressions in the mission.
The last time we were in San Francisco, I dropped microaggressions all over the city.
That's true.
So I just wrote microaggressions on pieces of paper, and then I left them around San Francisco.
Didn't you write something about Hillary Clinton?
I was like, Hillary would have run this country into the ground. I just left
Yeah, and
it
he would just stick it on a sticky on a post in San Francisco. And I was laughing my ass off. I'm like, this is pretty funny. This is pretty. And people, didn't some guy read it and throw it away? Like, it was just like, oh,
yeah, we came back and it was gone.
Yeah, it was gone. Yeah.
Somebody was like, I never.
what kind of liberal voice is this? You have the guy with the peanut and the monocle? Like, hey, no, I never. These conservatives.
Hey, his name is Mr. Peanut. How dare you?
Sorry.
Okay.
I didn't realize that I was committing a microaggression by stereotyping him as just a monocled nut.
Can I tell you, when I grew up in Arkansas, we lived near the peanut factory, and they had a huge Mr. Peanut outside. Oh, wow. So when I was a kid, I'd drive by a giant 50-foot Mr. Peanut every single day.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, it was dope.
That's tremendous.
And he had the big monocle and the whole thing.
Yeah. And nobody had peanut allergies then, did they?
Nah, there's no such thing as peanut allergies.
This is where your search for truth has stumbled upon just straight lies. I love it. All right. I think we should end this. What do you think?
I'm down.
Yeah. I think we did a thing.
I hit the mic with my hand.
Hold on. I'm done. No, we're not done yet. We're not done until Phil sings. Here it is.
I remember.
Don't worry. Does this worry. Oh.
This is where your search for truth is.
There you go.
You were drowning. I would not lend a hand.
Seen a face before, my friend.
But I don't know if you know who I am.
What you did,
I saw it with my own two eyes.
You can wipe off that grin.
I know where you've been. It's all been a pack of lies.
I can feel it. And we out.